Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today. Welcome to filmandtvreview.com. Catch the latest film, TV, and streamed show reviews every week. The views and opinions expressed by the authors and those providing comments are theirs alone. They do not reflect the views, opinions or position of filmandtvreview.com or their respective parent companies or affiliates. Filmandtvreview.com makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, suitability, or validity of any information in this program and is for entertainment purposes only. Episodes may contain adult humor and language. For full terms and conditions, see filmandtvreview.com.
Hello there, and welcome to our film and TV review special. We're joined by those who work in the industry and the projects that they work on. And today I'm joined by director Ben Wolfe, whose documentary Changing Lanes starts out as a local story of a tragic hit and run fatality of teacher Matthew Jensen on McGinnis Boulevard in Brooklyn, New York. But this kind of quickly opens up into something bigger, charting modern city politics through the eras, power, corruption, legal battles across the streets of New York and the people that live in them. So Ben, welcome. To put it in context, this film kind of begins in a very specific intersection. But first, if you take you back a bit about this New York story, you started out as a cinematographer at the beginning. Were you actively looking for topics as a documentarian at this point, or where were you at this
point? Sure. So most of my adult life, I've been in New York City. I came here in 1991 after college, and I've primarily worked as a cinematographer on a wide variety of projects, commercial and documentary and fiction. But documentary is the thing that I've sort of became increasingly passionate about over the years, and I really wanted to do something of my own, not only shoot other people's projects, which is something I do enjoy. And then when the pandemic really shut down most of my work, I finally had time to figure out, you know, what would be an interesting subject to follow. I've always been interested in urban transportation. I've been cycling in the city over the 30 plus years I've been here, and it's developed and changed quite a lot in that time, mostly for the better, but not entirely. And I also am, maybe like most Americans right now, quite preoccupied with politics and sort of the sick feeling that things aren't going very well in mm-hmm. our country. And I sort of wanted a way to, it was kind of the elephant in the room. It was just, so I felt like I needed to talk about that, but not in an overly broad, preachy way, but fine. But I feel like I found a story that's a very specific story, but it is sort of a microcosm for something larger. Sort of our difficulties in sort of coming together and making sort of rational, reasonable progress on pressing issues.
Your documentary, the title itself, Changing Lanes, it obviously invokes on the surface, not context of street traffic, street design, but as you watch it, it shifts in its allusion to like political power, cultural attitudes, identity, almost. It's almost a mission statement. Certainly you discover within the film as you watch. Was that the scope that you knew would be in mind when you started the documentary?
Well, it is what I hope to do, and for me, this sort of wonderful surprise seems to be that I seem to have pulled it off. And that this very specific local story developed in an interesting and ultimately positive way that I couldn't have predicted while making it. Most of the time when I was making this movie, I thought it was just going to be a story of complete political dysfunction, and the fact that there is ultimately a positive outcome, which I don't want to get into all the details, as I'd rather people, enjoy the surprises as they unfold when you see the movie. But anyway, there was quite a bit of luck, which there always is in documentary, about the exact way that this particular story played out.
So, I mean, to put it, because it's for international audiences, so McGinnis is a hybrid mine long street that connects like two highways, but
Correct.
also feeds like multiple intersections over heavy residential area in Brooklyn. I mean, I've been to New York. I do love it, walking around there, but it is obviously a part of its identity is the traffic. You can't get away with it. What made this part of New York story stay with you and want to actually expand it into a feature?
Sure. So when I again, sort of towards the end of the pandemic, when I was looking for a story, I was sort of following a bunch of street design projects and sort of safety initiatives that I thought would be. And I mean, I think initially I thought the movie would be more of a survey of a lot of different projects, but this particular one became so hyper political and so sort of intense that pretty soon I realized, oh, this is actually going to be the sort of the anchor of, and the center of this movie. It's a big enough, although it's a small, though it's only a 1 mile long street, the heat over the what to do about it just became like what was boiling hot, and I realized, that this is really is going to be that sort of microcosm of American politics, because people are just going for blood with this. They're not making sort of reasonable conversations and compromises about making some changes to make it safer. They are, fighting tooth and nail and trying to, like, I mean, it just went way over the top. And as is the case in many of our fights, I think ultimately maybe it wasn't even really a fight really about this particular street so much as it becomes a fight about identity and about the different people in the neighborhood and who's in control.
It's a long-standing design there, but then.
Yeah, I can give a little context. I mean, McGinnis Boulevard was originally Oakland Street, which was actually a small residential cobblestone street. And then in the 1950s, Robert Moses, who you may even know about in England, who was a big American, well, he's the biggest influence on the design of America in the 20th century. He put in all highways everywhere, huge bridges everywhere. He was very contributed greatly to car culture and suburbanization. Anyway, this was one of his later projects. It was a He knocked down about 500 houses to expand and widen this small residential street into a four lane, almost highway that ran between two highways. And was the intention, and how it actually was used, was largely a connecting road between highways. But it did go through a residential community, and that's almost by definition, at least from today's standpoint, we can see that's usually not a good thing. Putting, fast automotive traffic in a place where people live and need to cross the street to go about their daily lives, and where most people in that community don't even have cars, is a problem. And so for about 70 years, it was a problem. It was, one estimate is perhaps about 200 people were killed in traffic violence on that street over the years. And it was about happening about once a week in modern history that there was a serious a crash involving a serious injury of a person. So not really a healthy or sustainable situation. And it was clear that something had to be done. And when this teacher was killed in 2021, crossing the street, sort of enough of the community was fed up enough, to try to do something about it.
Your initial setup is kind of you just show maybe at the beginning kind of explain maybe it's your you have a you're a cyclist as well as a motorist, but you eventually you are a cyclist. And then you but for documentary you have your setup of a trailer, so it looks like it's going to be a very intimate film because you don't know going in and even. But then it, and of course your beginning point is covering this tragedy, but then you knew politics was going to come into it, but maybe not to what extent. So when did you kind of know that, okay, I'm going to have to zoom out of this?
I was present at a meeting that's featured in the film where the part of the community that was opposed to changing, reducing cars on and narrowing the street had a meeting that they billed as a public meeting, but they locked out the part of the community that wanted change. So it was not a public meeting. And anyway, that I showed up at that event and it was supercharged and the protesters outside and, people screaming at each other. And anyway, I realized, and that was actually when I decided this would be the movie, this would be the thing that I think I would focus this movie on. So I knew from the beginning this is going to be a very political movie and a movie that is kind of a microcosm for things that we see at the national level, that it's there is a sort of trickle down effect that's happened, and although I haven't been super engaged in local politics in general, I hear from people who have that, New York City politics has always been intense not a and with quite a lot of corruption. However, things have degenerated in the sort of, to put it bluntly, the Trump era, where people see, oh, this is the way things are done at the national level. We're going to do it here too. We're not going to compromise. We're not going to listen to each other. We're going to scream. And we're going to get, and so that's sort of a solace. You see a lot of that. You see a lot of that. And I will say one of the things I love about streets in general is I felt like they're kind of a graphic illustration of sort of democracy. You have this limited resource, this literally this physical space, and you've got to do something with it. You can organize it in a lot of different ways. You can divide it up in a lot of different ways with paint and lines and curbs. And that sort of tells you a lot about what a certain community values or about who has power in the community, because there's a lot of people that want to do a lot of different things. And somehow you have to make an accommodation between, do you want this to be a nice place to walk? Do you want this to be a nice place for big trucks to come through? How do we navigate this complex, web of different interests that are going to use or want to use this resource? And so anyway, I like that aspect of it, that it was something that you could photograph that kind of illustrated how politics sort of unfolds, who has power in any given era. It's also something with a history, which we go into in the film, that these streets, again, were created like in New York and old places like most of Europe. Well before the automobile. So at one time, these streets were all about pedestrians, horses, maybe street carts, but they were a very social place during the course of the 20th century in almost all of America and in big cities all over the world. Really, the car sort of pushed everything else to the side. Reasons that happened, some of which are positive, the sort of at least the glamour, the romance of freedom that the car offered, the ability to just go anywhere you wanted really quickly in comfort. But the reality of it in cities often didn't meet the dream scenario. Often it was done at the expense of people that actually lived in these places and maybe didn't have cars or dense cities. Ultimately, cars never were really going to be an efficient solution because there's just not enough room for everybody to have a car. It just doesn't really work.
I'm guessing, I mean, over the course of, your search, when did it come apparent that, you're going to have to expand the time frame of what this documentary is going to be? You're going to have to look at the almost a biography of New York, how it develops, why you're so ingrained, why we have it there, and why it's so ingrained. So I'm guessing you for footage, resource to, rights to this, you must have thought, okay, did you?
Yeah, that's something like I knew the political angle was going to be important from the beginning. I did not appreciate initially how much history we would include, and that became a increasingly important part of the story. Largely, well, for a number of reasons. One, I think it's just very interesting, I think secondly, because, and I see this again in all elements of our politics, people often are willing to hold very extreme and no compromise kind of positions without actually really understanding the issue or knowing the history. And it's that this latch on to something, it just becomes sort of an identity thing. Like, my group of people hates bike lanes, so I'm just going to hate this, or it becomes, a proxy fight about gentrification. Oh, the new people are into bikes, the old people aren't, and it's just, so we're just going to fight about this. But I felt like history, I felt an important part of a movie like this is to educate people to understand something about the history of streets, like how did we get to where we are, and also some principles of urban planning, which, again, like many things like global warming or whatever, these are complex subjects, and you don't just master them. They're not just your intuitions are often wrong, and if you don't study them, there's no reason to believe that your opinion is particularly insightful, or maybe is going to lead to good outcomes. And so I feel like, what I hope documentary can do is help move the needle just a little bit towards, because I try to not come at this as a partisan. Of course, I have my opinions, but I try to come at it as more as somebody that's just giving people context to understand the issue in a deeper way and make sort of the best choices they can make. Streets, it turns out, are really interesting. The history is really interesting, and some of the design principles are surprising. I mean, the most classic one is something called induced demand, which we go into a bit in the movie, which is to say, traditionally, people thought if traffic is bad, the answer is to sort of widen the street and add more lanes for traffic. And it turns out that doesn't really work. And the reverse is also true. So a lot of people oppose these safety projects that involve often reducing car lanes because they say traffic is bad now. If you get rid of lanes, it's going to become, incredibly bad. That makes sense. Like, intuitively, you would say, yeah, that makes sense. But it's basically wrong. And again, you wouldn't know that if you don't actually, study the subject a little bit. So I think it's quite interesting.
Yeah, you do take time because you do show quite a few sequences where you people are try of the movement are trying to explain the solution and how counterintuitive it is because they kind of think of traffic as oil or
Right.
water. Why close it off? You're just going to circumvent and push these traffic into the neighboring roads. It's but trying to get over that is. I mean, we have same issues in Oxford Street also. We've had to try to pedestrianise that, but these same arguments, and I'm sure around the street, it's hard to see unless it's given a chance at least. But it's good that you actually show that because it is a debate on both sides that you want to be as balanced and show both sides why it's worrying.
And again, I do want to emphasize again, because sometimes I would show up with my camera and people would say, who are you? What side are you on? And I would just be like, I'm not on a side, like, and honestly, while I love bikes and I use them a lot, I also do have a car and I use it when necessary. I think there's a place for all these things. I think it's a really silly argument to boil everything down to like, you're either this or you're that. And again, there's no compromise. To me, these are all ways of getting around that have to coexist. They all have a purpose. It's a question of how do you do it in the most safe, and pleasant way possible. It's odd to me that in a place like New York, where most people, like that community, apparently only about 20% of people have cars, that in a place where only 20% of people have cars, you gave up 100% of the roadway. Seems like an odd choice. So it to me it makes some sense that a more balanced approach would divide that up in a little more thoughtful, careful way, and a way that's not, killing people on a regular basis.
I mean, the methods of kind of presenting the case, like I mentioned before, your initial outlay, you kind of had this almost one man band with your camera and your little trip. But this just kind of evolve into almost a different type of genre of documentary where you're covering quite your counter arguments, talking heads. So did you, as you're making is thinking, well, obviously my initial setup is not maybe as an intimate travelogue almost. I mean, that's maybe at the beginning you kind of thought, hey, maybe I'll be more part of this or as a
That's right. I did, as you mentioned, I did have this idea that I would, as a sort of a personal challenge and maybe a little bit of a gimmick to draw attention to the documentary, that I would just try to make it all just getting around on my bike and bringing my equipment with me, which I did do. And that's mentioned at the beginning of the movie. I think initially that story of traveling around the city on a bike would become, that I would be more of a presence or a character in the movie. And it's an interesting thing about documentaries is you go in with certain ideas and you adjust them as things unfold. And it became clear to me that enough was going on without, I didn't need to also be as such an important character in this movie.
That or where do those changes occur?
It's complex. I worked with a fabulous editor who's a good friend of mine named Kristen Bai, who I will give a huge amount of credit for as far as, making this a sort of digestible story. I probably shot about 100 hours over 3 years, which is not unusual for a documentary, but you can see that's a lot of work to boil that down to a 75 minutes that sort of makes sense and it's entertaining and fun. About half way, so maybe a year and a half into my shooting, I started working with Kristen, the editor. And that was neat because on some projects, people just finish shooting and then start editing. But in this case, in the middle of the shooting, we were already starting to work with the material, which was great because it sort of helped inform me about, what needed to be shot going forwards and the sort of, and as you're talking about, as the style of the film kind of got more solidified, it became clear to me the things to focus on and the, again, like my story kind of fell to the side, and some of these political things loomed larger, I suppose the historical things loomed larger. Certain people that I really wanted to get in the movie, it just, as interviews took, quite a lot of time. So, like, David Byrne is someone that I actually already had a bit of a relationship with from some other projects. So he was actually one of the first interviews, which was great. He's a very interesting man who has a lot to say on about getting around the city and getting around other cities in the world. So I thought he would be a good voice for that. But the other sort of headline personality is Jeanette Sadek Khan, who is ran transportation under in the Bloomberg era in New York and made sort of huge changes in the city. And that are kind of celebrated in the movie. Anyway, it took me a couple of years before I could get to her. Because again, this really was an independent, when people again say, which side are you on or who are you working for, or whatever, I was on my side. This is my movie. I wasn't working for anybody, that I had no money from anybody. This was no big agenda. This was just something I was interested in. And so when I would approach some people, they just didn't know who I was, and it took quite a while to sort of establish, that I was a legitimate, worth talking to, and that this was a serious project.
How did you actually approach, just a quick question, how did you approach David? Because he's of a talking heads fame and icon videos from the MTV audience era.
Yeah.
You would know these songs immediately, but how did you, because he is an interesting, obviously it's a pop icon, but also as a cyclist, he's a very good international view of it. As a cyclist through the areas of New York and around the world, how did you reach out and get him on board
Yeah.
with
Well,
this?
again, I was lucky that I'd actually worked on a few other film projects with him over the years. I shot a concert documentary with him called Ride, Rise, Roar, maybe a decade ago, that involved traveling with him around the US and in England and Scotland. And so I knew him a bit, and I would run into him over the years every now and then. I knew him just well enough to have his email and to be able to write an email saying, I'm going to do this doc, I'm going to make this documentary about cycling in the city. Would you be up for an interview? And like literally an hour later, I got a reply. Sure, like let's do it. So that was wonderful, and it also just tells you something about what kind of human being he is. That he's genuinely interested in these subjects. This was not about money or fame or anything. This was just something that he's also passionate about and was happy to participate in.
Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today.
So obviously you kind of feature, I suppose, the opposition, the group protesting, but when you were trying to depict the business, you know, opposition groups like McGuinness Moving, and how did you stop characterizing, because you know, doing a caricature, or did you even get them to agree to go on camera? Because I'm not sure you got, you know,
No.
were they willing? Because I'm feeling you would have wanted that counter.
Yeah, I very much
argument.
did. And it is delicate. And I didn't, and I did want to respect everybody and not, again, I was not so much, I really wanted to avoid making a film that could be just dismissed as propaganda, just like a one-sided film, which there's a lot of out in the world. A lot of documentaries are very, very one-sided. I think it's inevitable that a documentary is represents in some way the views of the person who made it. And I can't deny that that's the case here, but I did want to try to be fair. So I did reach out quite a lot to both sides. The side that's called Make McGuinness Safe, that's the side that wanted the change, was very open you know, were happy to have me hang out while they canvassed in the park, and were happy to talk, you know, on camera about what they wanted. And the side that was opposed, you know, I went to a bunch of their events and shot their march and stuff, and that's in the movie, but I kept requesting like a formal interview with the leadership, and I was unable to get it. They never exactly said no, but they just, things were, there was a lot of suspicion and I would say paranoia. And I think it tells you that there's something different between these two groups. And it's not that there aren't decent people on both sides, because I'm sure there are, but I think a lot of, some of the people that were in the camp opposing the changes, I think weren't as transparent. I think they, in some cases, there were business interests. There was sort of a real agenda, and then there was sort of a public facing, you know, we call this astroturfing, where the grassroots is kind of when you have a legitimate political movement that comes from the bottom and people wanting something. Astroturfing is when you know, you try to make it look like it's grassroots, but it's not exactly grassroots. I think there was quite a lot of that on the sides that were opposed. I think what sort of, and again, I don't want to give away everything that happens in the movie, but what has subsequently come out was trials are still happening now, a level of corruption happening between the business interests and the local government to sort of keep these programs, the safety programs, from being implemented in a way that was not above board, that was not democratic. And to a certain extent, this group opposed to it was the creation of the businesses to try to look like there, you know, there was a sort of large community uprise against it, which I don't think it's nearly as large as they sort of appeared to be. But like when we've had elections in that community, Emily Gallagher, who's the state senator that's most closely aligned with fighting for these changes, wins by like 80%. So when it comes to votes, it's not particularly close. But when you would, you know, go to a certain public meeting, you would see people on both sides, like seemingly fairly equal, like screaming at each other. And so it's hard. And again, which I think is happening a lot in our, at every level of our politics, it becomes very confusing to people and hard for them to sort of make an educated, nuanced evaluation of things, because you're often just met with a lot of anger and hostility and yelling and not much sort of reasonable perspective and sort of honesty about why people are taking the positions they're taking. And the fights often become much more about, again, about sort of identity issues or almost tribal than about like, well, you know, it's fine that you've lived in this community for 50 years, but what are we going to do about the person who's going to die next week that we would prefer doesn't die next week? You know, like, but how is this going to actually result in life getting better for people? And that's I think the biggest sort of, again, I don't have the answers, but I did want to at least sort of illustrate the problem. And I think we see it pretty, bright clear here what the problem is.
I mean, the movie does take time to kind of follow kind of the battle for recognition for, I mean, over decades for bikes as traffic citizens and not just a lifestyle accessory. I mean, you come through the, let's say, I don't know, the 90s, where the messenger kind of painted as the annoyance, but part of a necessary infrastructure. And then as the app kind of food delivery community, was that important to show how their identity has developed and kind of been accepted over the years? Because it's different stories over different countries, but in New
It's a
York
very
especially.
complicated story. I also want to emphasize that I try to not think of my movie. Cycling is an important part of the movie, but I don't think of it like as a bike movie. I think it's a movie about streets and politics, and it's as much about cars as bikes and pedestrians. All are important, but the story of bikes in New York is fascinating. And there are a whole couple of whole thick books about the history of cycling in the city, and it's kind of come in waves. And there are certain times. I think in like the 1920s, there was a huge craze of cycling in the city. Most of this stuff in the modern era, it's really been the cars became so dominant that it was always hard for bikes in the city. But when there would be like an oil crisis, when there'd be anything that constrained cars, that would always create this opportunity for bikes. And the same thing happened in the COVID era. Like suddenly, people needed other ways to get around because transit wasn't safe, so the bikes come out or whatever. The dramatic change that happened in my life here, I came right after the sort of bike messenger period in the late 80s, really, because they were the big cyclists. Even when I came here, again, this is right before the internet took over, so people were still shuttling papers all over the city from office building to office building, and that was mostly done on bikes. And that, in the way that people right now often despise delivery people on their e-bikes, and those people do in many cases break laws and ride on sidewalks and terrorize people, and I understand why that's a problem. But anyway, 40 years ago, it was these bike messengers that were scaring people, and then Mayor Koch, because of that, prohibited bikes from the middle of New York City, and that sort of politicized the issue heavily, and that was met with this huge that at least the movie makes the argument that sort of in the modern era that was sort of the beginning of the rising political consciousness of cyclists. It's like anytime you repress something, often it strengthens or gels or gets organized. And you already had all these messengers who were young, dynamic guys making a living, and suddenly they were highly political. And so this ban on cycling in Midtown was short-lived because the reaction to it was very strongly negative. After that, we have some oil crises. We have also critical mass was, and that was happening while I was in New York, which was again cyclists starting to assert themselves as sort of legitimate users of the road. So you would have rides where thousands of cyclists would congregate and take over streets, which again became very was like a party for the cyclists, but often really pissed off the drivers. And again, that's something that also provoked a reaction because then Mayor Bloomberg came down hard on that, and people were getting arrested for riding their bikes, and their bikes were getting impounded, which again seems, there's often this sort of swinging pendulum and often overly reacting and again not reaching sort of reasonable accommodations. I would say that right after that was the most sort of productive phase, which was this Jeanette Sadek Khan era under Bloomberg, where there were actually major systemic changes made to the city to try to make it more accommodating for sort of pedestrians and bikes, which involved such things as the introduction of the bike share system in New York, which is the biggest one in the United States, the pedestrianization of Times Square, just removing cars completely from Times Square. At the time, these were very controversial things to do that met a lot of resistance. Also, the putting in on very wide avenues, in some cases, taking a lane away from cars and devoting it to bikes, and with a hard separation, which is the kind of thing we is now quite commonplace all over the world, really. Although in New York, we're still, and the McGinnis story was largely about that kind of an implementation. In that, in her, I think about 7 years of tenure, there was quite a dramatic transformation of a good deal of New York City. And since that time, we saw much fewer changes or a much slowed pace of change, especially under Adams, who was the mayor in power during most of the production of this film. Very little was done, such as the McGinnis plan. Like, okay, under the previous mayor de Blasio, the plan was made about what to do to McGinnis, but then under Adams, it was like, yeah, we're gonna have some more meetings about it, and just things weren't really happening. So I don't know. That's some kind of a quick summary of the kind of changes that have happened in the sort of in my time in New York City, which have been pretty dramatic.
Do you think it's slowed down, or is it the same in maybe? I mean, New York's pretty made some good headway, but is it? Do you find it still a bit of a cultural thing like that? We
I
really don't
do.
have cars, or you've been around the world, you've seen, how it
I know.
is.
Well, I know for one thing, New York is about, in America, the most, the least car-centric city, and it's still very, very car-centric. And we at least have a good, in general, good transit, good subways here, reasonable buses, which most of America doesn't have. In most of America, you literally have no choice but to drive a car. There's no option. It's not safe or pleasant for walking or biking, and there's probably no subway. So that's what you got. And the fact that even in New York, in my opinion, we're not world class. And the statistics bear that out. We are still having way more injuries and death here than is generally the case in Western Europe and Japan, like dramatically more. We go into the statistics in the film. Or at least if you look at America as a whole, per capita, I think we have about four times as much serious injury and death on our streets compared to Western Europe at this point, which shows you there's a dramatic difference. And again, I don't have all the answers, but one of the questions that I think the film raises is, why are we having so much difficulty changing? What is it about our culture that's And I think these problems are mostly political problems, like what's happened to our politics. This is a country that, built highways and bridges, unprecedented scale. And now doing simple things like painting some lines on the street is like extremely hard. I think it is, it's an indication that something is failing. Exactly what that exactly causes and how you rectify that is not obvious to me, but it is a sort of undeniable, and I think it's important to make those comparisons. I think because especially for people that always want to insist that somehow that what we've got is so great, or we shouldn't change it. Well, it's like, well, many of our systems at this point are just not working as well as other places in the world. So it's pretty clear to me that, it could be better. And it's a question of how do we generate the political will to make the changes. It's very people. And again, I don't think it's a uniquely American problem, but it seems very strong in America right now that there's a great resistance to change and a strong sense that maybe what we have isn't the best, but you're just going to make it worse if you change it.
I mean, you've gone on to festivals with this. What the reaction to any particular scenes that you've been like surprised or you've been pleased about that? There's some scenes with some vigils where you actually list, the name of those who have actually died, and also then you show like statistics as you showed on globally what's happening in mortality rates and all that. What on the festival circuit, what scenes of kind of people have you've heard like, oh, silence or complete kind of
Well, I'll say,
reacted to?
what I enjoy the most always is hearing laughter, and I think it's nice. It was important to me that this movie isn't just some grim, like story about death and destruction, because that's part of the story. But there is a lot of humor in human behavior in general, and in especially there's just a few points in the movie, mostly in these sort of political scenes where people are just being outrageous that is perhaps sad, but generally generates some laughs too, because it's just so ridiculous. And I like, I it's always gratifying to me to see audiences just see the humor in some of this stuff. It's also been interesting traveling around with it. So far, it's going to play for the first time in Europe. It looks like in towards the end of September in a couple festivals right now in Czechia and Poland and a couple other things brewing. But it's mostly been in America, and also it's played in Toronto and Vancouver, and most cities where it's played, people here relate very directly to it. It's like every city has its McGinnis Boulevard. The people are very familiar with these fights, and that comes up more in the conversations that we generally have after the movie than during the movie. But I always, again, that's, I guess, the reason to make a movie like this is to for people to learn from this particular example and maybe to reflect on how it relates to what's happening with them. And it doesn't seem to be. People generally are not seeing it as some isolated thing that happened in some neighborhood in Brooklyn. They're like, oh, we had, the exact same thing happened here. The people make the same arguments against change here. The same businesses rise up, and then people that have been in places for a few years note, oh, and the same businesses that were fighting it are now doing better than they ever did, which is usually what happens in these cases. It's again. Businesses are not academics. They don't really know the subject very well. They usually are just conservative. They just don't want to rock the boat. If they're making some money, they don't want to, they're just afraid things will get worse.
I mean, it is a very much a multi-thread story, and it's over 3 years, but there must be moments because you're kind of looking for this kind of narrative to a documentary, almost, a beginning, middle, and almost an end. But there must have been so many stop, start, stalls, and rollbacks that you must have thought, was there a point where this project just nearly just fell apart, even like financially, because you're bankrolling it, getting your funding, and then pull back, or maybe thinking, let's make it shorter, or waiting for some kind of natural end, which did come eventually, but I'm guessing it's like fishing. You really don't know when. So how long, what was your kind of experience?
There was a tremendous amount of luck in this, in that around the time we were naturally, where I was probably running out of money, and also like where the editor had been working on it for, a good year or whatever, is when in fact this sort of surprising turn happened, which does provide an end to the movie, which is basically, without getting into the nitty-gritty, again, for most of the time I was making this movie, I did not expect the proposed changes to actually happen, because it just seemed like the resistance was too strong and the leadership of the city too corrupt, and it just felt like, oh, they're just gonna it's just not gonna or it's gonna get watered down to the point of not really being very good. Some of the corruption was basically brought to light, and some indictments went down, and suddenly stuff that was not politically feasible became feasible, and the actual big changes were implemented rather quickly. And it also tended to coincide with the new Mamdani administration, and so it sort of and so it all sort of tied up itself very neatly, and which was great. And it is a very exciting moment in New York, which again, I was lucky. My movie kind of the timing of my movie that you have Mamdani elected right around the time we're finishing this movie, and literally on the third day of Mamdani's administration, he goes to McGinnis Boulevard and has a press conference there, because it's become that big of a thing in the city, where he was like, this is literally a symbol of the corruption of the previous administration, and also has become sort of a symbol that change is possible, if people get organized and work hard, and he wants to see these sort of changes implemented much more broadly on a more systemic level. And I believe, until I'm proven otherwise, that he's sincere about that. It does seem like we're entering another era similar to the Bloomberg era, a period where we're going to see a lot more aggressive changes to the status quo, which is not a good status quo. It's not, we should keep good aspects of what's working here, but we should also We should be a much safer and more pleasant city that's up to the same standards that we enjoy when we travel around the world. And there's no reason why that can't happen here. That's except for political reasons. There's no sort of physical reason we can't make these changes.
Yeah, well, I'll probably find a happy ending there, so let it end when it does, and we'll see. But I mean, finally, I mean, you do explore some of the talking heads towards the end of what cities mean to them, and it kind of for them comes a representation of their culture or their country almost. Which individual interviewees kind of shaped or inspired your understanding of how they saw the city, or you kind of like really resonated with you, or wasn't even able to make the cut? What kind of like it's a film of
Well,
many perspectives.
we've talked about David, who, and honestly, initially, obviously, a lot of my motivation to bring him in was just to raise the profile of the film because everybody knows him. And but he's a rare, celebrity, and that he's also quite an intellectual and quite knowledgeable on the subject. He's even written a book called Bicycle Diaries about his riding around the city. So he was kind of the perfect combination of celebrity, but also somebody that actually has some gravitas and something serious to say. So he was great. Most of the other people that I talked to were actually like real people in positions of power at various points in the city. People that ran transportation, like Sam Schwartz in the Koch era, Junaid Sadık Khan in the Bloomberg era, John Orcutt, who worked under Junaid Sadık Khan. Charlie Komenoff, who is sort of a transportation economist in the city. So I just felt like it's important. I mean, getting back to this notion that this is a complicated subject, and I didn't want to just make a movie that's just me spouting off my sort of opinions as just a random guy. I wanted to hear from people that actually this was their job. They had the expertise and the power to do things, and I thought. And what's cool about a movie like making a local movie like this, like I can't talk to President Obama or whatever, or not easily, but these are people, although they, that I could, that even as a citizen of the city, I could get to those people, it turns out. And that's pretty cool. And I also think these local politics matter a lot. It's not everything is, you can argue that a mayor might have just as much an effect on a citizen as the president, because again, like the design of your streets matters. It's not everything is sometimes just local politics is very important anyway. And I really got to appreciate that. And also meeting with literally the state senators, the borough president, these like local officials who are actually surprisingly accessible. And I didn't know any of those people. I just literally emailed them. I'm like, I'm doing a documentary. Can we meet in the next month or two? And I would generally get a, yeah, sure, let's do it. I just think that's pretty exciting. And that's sort of how democracy should work. I mean, these people shouldn't be somewhere else. You should be able to have a dialogue with them and a conversation. And so in that way, I guess this was a very positive experience for me personally, and it gave me maybe some reassurance about the functioning of our democracy, at least on the sort of local level, that yeah, you can actually engage these people. And also, I will add also the activists who really fought for this, I sort of developed quite a huge admiration for them, that they found a cause, a local cause that they could actually do something about. Because a lot of my friends who are political are very preoccupied with what's happening in the Middle East or whatever, and that's not important, but the bottom line is, what are you going to actually do about it? And these people found out something local that is important, that involves literally people living and dying, and they worked really hard over several years and got something done, and I think that's terrific.
Right, thanks. Well, then, Changing Lanes is, I think, on distribution. It is on Amazon, available on Amazon.
It is, unfortunately, right now it is only, I believe, Amazon in America and Canada. I'm actually trying to
We
I don't
can you can rent it, I think, on
You can in
Prime.
the UK?
Yeah, I saw
Well,
it, so you
that
can
is
rent
excellent if you can, because
it.
one of the things that I want to do as soon as possible is get some foreign distribution that I don't have yet, because I think at least in most of Europe, I don't believe it's available yet.
No, but it's a global story. I mean, for every kind of metropolitan city, it is a, like you mentioned before, it is you, we do face those same questions with our roads that are evolving and with traffic. So you do recognize in these scenes, oh yeah, this is my city, yeah, as well.
And I think you might also, if you're interested in American politics, it might also be a bit of a lesson about
Oh
that.
yeah,
You can sort of compare
snapshot.
and contrast with your own political problem.
Yes, it's sometimes a bit too close to home, but
If people are perhaps interested in having a screening for the film, and I do get inquiries from all over the world, that can also just be done sort of separately from streaming, and people can there's a website for the film, which is changinglanesdoc.com, and you can connect to me through that if you'd like, if you would want to set up a screening in your city, wherever that is.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks. Well, yeah, definitely click on. Thanks, Ben, for your time. And like I said, try and catch this. It's a good international story, quite honestly. It's a New York story, but it is a metropolitan story globally, I think. Ben, thank you, and for your home. See you next time.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this film and TVReview.com episode. Catch the latest film and TV reviews, together with regular episode content from the world of film and TV every week. See you soon. Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today.